This is an iHeart podcast.
You know, your house smells. Don't get mad. My house smells too. I'm not indicting you. I'm sure you keep a clean home, but just time means you're going to acquire smells, whether those are cooking smells that get in your paint, your carpet. Maybe they're animal smells. Maybe you're a smoker or someone else was. Just living creates smells. I didn't realize that my home had a smell to it until I got my first Eden Pure Thunderstorm, the greatest air purifier I've ever owned in my life. This thing, I had it plugged in for 2 hours. I came back in the room and my air smelled so clean. I now own three of them. I'm not making that up. This thing has absolutely changed me on top of what it's done for my allergies. Go get one. Get two. Be like me and get three. Go to EdenPureDeals.com. Make sure you use the promo code Jesse. That gets you $10 off and free shipping. EdenPureDeals.com, promo code Jesse.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
I love a good crime story. And you do too. It's part of our, I don't know, is it a fallen nature thing? Is it a admiration for their courage thing? Probably a little bit of that. The sense of doom that comes of with reading about criminals, even how you know their story ends, has always, that part has always fascinated me, and this is what I'm talking about. I obviously have made a million and one bad decisions in my life. But I can't wrap my mind around the short-term thinking that comes with a conscious decision to be a criminal. And when I say conscious decision, I mean to be a criminal repeatedly with big crimes. I don't mean a murder, a crime of passion. All right, got mad, killed somebody, go into jail, put you in an electric chair. I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about getting caught up in minor things. I'm talking about, like our person today, we're going to talk about making a conscious decision. I am going to be a career criminal. Don't you find that fascinating? Wait, what? Why? Even with the money and stuff that comes with that. I mean, our guy today is a bank robber. But even with the money that comes with, let's say, drug dealing. I'm going to deal cocaine, whatever the big drug is out there now. I admit I'm not up on the drug scene. I'm going to deal cocaine. I'm going to be a cocaine dealer. And again, I want to stress this. Not that I'm excusing anything. I'm not talking about the dude who finds himself with the cocaine hookup and sells a little extra a couple times. I'm talking about the guy who just decides, oh, this is something I'm just going to do. And he brings in big bags of it and sells it. What are you thinking? I'm not saying that in the insulting, you're such an idiot way. I'm thinking, what is the thought process behind that? Because it's a virtual guarantee that story ends one of two ways. You dead or arrested. That's how those stories end. So why do it? Why do it? And why do it if you're our guy today who seemed to have certainly nothing storybook, but seemed to have a decent family life? I'm not talking about some dude raised by gangsters. We're talking about a man named John Dillinger. Obviously, you've heard of John Dillinger. If you haven't, you will have by the day is over today. John Dillinger. He was not a poor immigrant. You know, one of the poor. How many times have we talked about a mobster on this show? Especially the early years ones. And it starts out the same way every single time. A poor Italian immigrant brought up in the Italian section of New York, surrounded by street gangs, and just kind of gets caught up in that life. Not excusing them either, but just kind of gets caught up in that life. Dillinger's born in Indianapolis. His dad ran a grocery store, a small grocery store. Dillinger's mom died early, and that probably had a bad effect on him. Died when he was around 4. But parents were, I don't know how strict they were about it, and you never know the internals of these things with anybody, but parents were religious, especially later on in John's life. The dad became a Quaker. You know, Quakers, it's not exactly a rough and tough one either. That's, you know, gentle, nice. There's a place here in the Houston area called Friendswood because it was founded by Quakers. And Quakers call everybody friend. Like, that's just how they greet people. How in the world did John Dillinger come from that? And because he's such a famous name, you've heard of John Dillinger. They've dug into his biography 1,000 times, and he wasn't born in 1200. He's born, he's living his early 1900, let's call it that. Our whole story today is going to be 1900, 1920s, 1930s. But because he's born in an era where we have, you know, things written down, we have names, dates, heights, weights. They can dig into things about him. And it's been fascinating figuring out why he turned out that way. You know the old story, and this hits home to me because this was me. Full disclosure, quick side note. As you can imagine, I was a bit of a mischievous child. Now, in all seriousness, I would tell you if I was terrible. I was not. I was not some menace. I was mischievous. Class clown type stuff. Maybe a little prank here or there. I'm not breaking windows and committing crimes. I was just mischievous, you know? Mischievous child. And our elder at our church, we went to a church when I was young. My old man wasn't going to church yet, so it was just me, my sister, and my mom. We would go to a church. It was a Church of Christ. I don't even know if it's still there. It was in Toronto, Ohio. You've never heard of Toronto, Ohio. Yes, it's just like the Toronto, Canada. It's right along the Ohio River. I was born in a hospital in Steubenville, the next town over, but we lived in Toronto, a tiny town in Ohio, until I was about 10 years old. And we were going to this Church of Christ when I was a kid, mom, sister, and me. And like I said, we're doing the normal church thing. I didn't feel like I was too bad in church. Obviously, I'd get scolded to be quiet and things like that. But one day, one of the church elders presents my mom with a oak wooden paddle. For me, and presents it to her, and I quote, to save me from hell. Now, I would love to have heard how that conversation went with my mom, but I'll tell you this, she took it and used it. Nevertheless, the reason I thought of that story when I was reading about Dillinger over the weekend was, he doesn't appear to have been anything but just kind of a mischievous kid. There are rumors that his dad spoiled him and abused him, would do things like lock him in his room for days and then let him do whatever he wanted, just and who knows what's true and what's not there. Maybe the loss of his mom messed him up, but he was well thought of by his teachers. Again, mischievous, a prankster, but nothing criminal, not brought up in the bad part of town, didn't grow up, again, surrounded by gangs, organized crime, just a kid who lit a bag of dog poop on fire on someone's doorstep and rang the doorbell. I don't know if he actually did that, but I did that. But, I mean, you know what? Little pranks. Little stupid pranks. But, man, it went wrong fast.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
My Raycon earbuds make my day better. I know that sounds ridiculous to say about wireless earbuds, even high-quality wireless earbuds like Raycon, but they do. Because, one, they don't hurt my ears. When I'm off the air, I love to have earbuds in as I walk around. Raycon, not only do they sound great, the bass, the voices, they're comfortable in my ears. And that's why it makes my day better, because I never have to take them out. Whenever I'm not on the air, I have my Raycon earbuds in. I'm either listening to music or a podcast. I don't even take them out now when I'm driving home. I have Bluetooth and a stereo in my truck. I still just choose my Raycon earbuds. And they cost like half of the other premium wireless earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/Jesse. That's buyraycon.com/Jesse. That gets you 15% off. John Dillinger's a prankster. John Dillinger's an athlete. Very, very, very good baseball player, second baseman. There's actually going to be more on that a little later on. But on top of being a prankster, Dillinger starts to idolize some people, and one of those people is Jesse James. You see, this is a funny thing about the criminal world, and I've always found this to be funny about the sports world, but the criminal world, I find this to be very, very odd. I had a chance to sit down with somebody one time. I'm not going to go into it, but he used to lead quite a life of crime. And he said one of the funny things about mob guys is they try to look like and talk like and act like the mob guys in the movies and the TV shows. They sometimes take their cues from Hollywood, which thinks it's taking their cues from them. Gangsters, same thing. Rappers were trying to look like gangsters. And he said it all goes full circle. Now gangsters are trying to look like rappers. Criminals oftentimes grow up idolizing other criminals, trying to do what they did. Dillinger starts reading stories about infamous outlaw Jesse James and finds out that Jesse James was, you know, daring and brave. Dillinger decides he wants to be that. He finds out Jesse James was very kind to most innocent people, held the door open for women, good to kids, and Dillinger likes that too. And this ended up being, I guess, kind of a benefit to Dillinger later on when the public was cheering for him, worshiping him. Now, a lot of that stuff was overblown, but Dillinger did not have a reputation, unlike a lot of his contemporaries. Dillinger did not have a reputation for random violence, for violence against civilians. Had a reputation for being quite nice. But he starts reading about Jesse James. His pranks are increasing in frequency and severity, and there is already rumor floating around as an early teen, 15, 16 years old, that Dillinger is starting to commit very, very, very petty crimes. Shoplift a candy bar type thing. Again, small. But Dillinger cannot seem to hold down a steady job. You have known somebody like this. Maybe we all have our flaws. Maybe you're one of these people like this. And let me tell you, you need to work on it. Dillinger would show up at a place, do very well. They would love him, but then he would just flake and leave. He seems to be the type of person who bores really easily, probably highly intelligent, they have figured out, almost undoubtedly, somebody with some sort of mental thing going on. I don't mean crazy, unstable, but there's something wrong here. The dude cannot hold a job. Gets a job as a mechanic, does very, very well as a mechanic, even though, again, he flakes out often, and that mechanic thing is going to come back into play here in just a little bit. The man knows his way around cars, knows his way around cars well. Knows his way around firearms well, grew up hunting. Joins the Navy. I know you're going to find this shocking, but he joined the Navy to get himself out of trouble. Now, he wasn't in huge trouble, but he was in minor trouble, was worried about it getting bad, and this was a day and age in America where joining the military can cover up a whole lot of sins. Even if they happen to find out about you joining the military, they kind of let that go. Now, I don't know if they do this anymore. I don't think they do. But let me tell you this. My dad said they used to make people join the Marine Corps or go to jail. They used to give people options when he was a kid. Chris just said it happened to Jimi Hendrix. That's hilarious. I thought Jimi Hendrix was a foreign citizen. Oh, it doesn't matter. He joins the Navy and figures out that Navy life is simply not going to work for him. And this is not the first time this has happened in the history of mankind. He joins the United States Navy, joins the United States military, probably getting sold a bit of a bill of goods on what it's going to be and what it's not going to be. You notice in the recruiting offices, and I'm not judging the military or military recruiting offices. This is the way the game's played. But have you ever noticed outside the recruiting office, they don't have a picture of the guy shoveling crap? We used to, when we were in Iraq, our younger Marines used to have to go take the gigantic buckets where everybody would relieve themselves. They used to have to go grab those buckets, drag them away from the building where they were held, fill them up with fuel, and light them on fire. Do you think any of those were put on a recruiting poster somewhere? John Dillinger joins the Navy, and John Dillinger finds himself shoveling coal on a naval vessel before air conditioning. For 22 straight days, yes, the man does not last long. Boom, gone, takes off. Now, somewhere along the line, and I'm skipping over a lot of smaller, petty things, he started his own street gang. Again, this is not an area heavy in gangs. He started his own. He just seemed to want this badly. Decides he's going to rob a local grocer. A grocer in a town of less than 3,000 people. I forget how many it was, but a tiny town. The town where Dillinger's living at the time. Robs him in broad daylight. The getaway driver Dillinger uses for this crime, he has a buddy he's with. Getaway driver panics and takes off, so Dillinger has no getaway car. His plan is to rob the grocer of the receipts. The grocer resists. Dillinger tries to hit him with his pistol. It all goes bad. Boom. Dillinger arrested. Now, I read several different things where they blamed this exact moment on Dillinger becoming who Dillinger eventually was. Dillinger's about to get sent off to prison. He gets arrested. He chooses not to have a lawyer. He was supposedly promised leniency by the judge if he pled guilty. He went in, pled guilty, and they gave him 10, 15 years hard time for his first ever. I mean, they just threw the book at him. And people who write about Dillinger talked endlessly about how this is what made him. This is proof that the criminal justice system made this criminal like they make so many other criminals. And here's the problem with that. I actually don't have a huge argument with a lot of people who say that, because it's undoubtedly true. A lot of people become career criminals when they go into the system. Surrounded by other criminals, surrounded by that world, learning from that world, they do. I don't want to dismiss that as something stupid. My problem with it when it comes to this story is this was a man on that path on purpose. He didn't need prison to become a criminal. But when he got to prison, he decided he was really going to become a good criminal. Hang on. Home title theft is not something imaginary. That's not something that happens only in other countries, other states, something that happens in the movies somewhere. This is happening to real people all across the United States of America. Home title fraud is sweeping the nation. They can't figure out how to stop it. These cyber thieves are incredible with what they can do. They get your home title, which exists online. It exists digitally. They get your signature on it. They go take a loan out against it. You have to pay that loan back. I cannot stress that point enough. You are going to have to pay that loan back, not your home insurance or anyone else. And if you don't, and you probably won't because you won't even think you took it out, they will evict you from your home. Go to HomeTitleLock.com. That's HomeTitleLock.com. Use the promo code Jesse. Get yourself 30 free days of protection. He goes to prison, and he goes to not the worst of the worst prison, an average run-of-the-mill prison. Dillinger is well-liked by his inmates. Apparently, the guy was very charismatic. Not well-liked by the guards. Dillinger, as you can imagine, has a real problem with authority. Dillinger, however, doesn't like this prison. Why doesn't he like this prison? Well, it's not the food or the hours or anything like that. I'm sure he didn't like that. In Dillinger's mind, he was not surrounded by hardened enough criminals that he could learn from. Dillinger wanted to go to a higher security prison where the criminals would be more career criminal types, where he could really get an education. Dillinger, by this point in time, again, I find this so odd, has made a conscious decision. This is what I want to do for a living. Crime. He does get himself transferred, I think it was Indiana State Penitentiary, don't quote me on that, to another prison. He gets in this prison and gets in with a bunch of bank robbers from the day. And allow me to take a brief step out, and let's discuss that for a moment, because the era we live in here is going to come into play. Remember, the 1920s in America were absurdly, absurdly profitable. They called them the Roaring Twenties for a reason. Had a couple little hiccups there, but for the most part, business was booming in this country. Booming. Well, but that bubble eventually burst, so I don't know if you want to say the foundations were solid, but it was going really well. And during the 20s, we also had prohibition. You know what prohibition was? The government decided people can't buy alcohol. This rose organized crime to a level of power in this country that you can't possibly imagine. Well, roaring 20s, organized crime, lots of business everywhere. There started to be this era of bank robbers coming of age here in the 20s. For a million different reasons, they had a bunch of different backgrounds. I have another one I actually want to do a story on shortly, so I'm not going to go into all of them. But robbing banks really became a thing. And then the Great Depression hit. Now, contrary to what people say, these bank robbers, John Dillinger included, did not go out and rob banks because they were mad at what the banks did during the Great Depression. You remember during the Great Depression, the banks would obviously take people's homes if they weren't paying their mortgages. That's a bank's job. And the banks would close. This is before the era of banks having your money federally insured. So try to imagine you waking up this morning, tomorrow morning, going online to check your bank account and finding the bank has been shut down. Oh, okay, well, where's my money? Oh, no, it's gone. It was in the bank that shut down. 4,000 banks closed during this era. 4,000 banks. Do you know what the population of the United States of America was back then? It was about half of what it is now. You know how many banks 4,000 is for that many people? It's a lot. And if your money was in them, it was gone. You know how many people lost their job and their life savings in a matter of months during this time? You want to talk about devastation. And doing a brief fast forward, when you get the public fascination with these bank robbers, especially Dillinger, Pretty Boy Floyd, others, Bonnie and Clyde, a lot of it came from public anger at the banks. These guys were about to start robbing banks, and everyone was like, oh, yeah, look at Dillinger taking it to the man, robbing these banks because of what they did to us. Dillinger was a bank robber before the Great Depression, or was about to be, and he was in it for the money. He wasn't in it but it was not hard to sell that. To people who hated banks, resented banks, here's a guy robbing banks. Yeah, get him. You know what I mean? It's hard for us to understand that kind of hatred. You know what? Here's a great way to put it, especially for my audience. What if a vigilante arose today, and do not do this. This is not good. This is a crime. Do not do this. But what if a vigilante arose today and he or his gang began breaking into and robbing at gunpoint some of the major news organizations in the country? You know what I'm talking about, all the ones you scream about at night. CNN, someone held up CNN headquarters at gunpoint. Someone held up the Washington Post. Someone held up the New York Times at gunpoint. You wouldn't support that at all. But you wouldn't be that mad about it either, would you? You know what I mean? You don't have to admit it to me. Don't put it in writing. I know. Oh, man, someone robbed the Washington Post? What's that? Nobody really got hurt? Oh, that sucks. You know what I mean? Well, that's how banks were thought of at the time. Now, he gets in this maximum security prison with these hardened criminals, and they figure out they have a sharp young man on their hands, and they all decide together. I mean, it's just wild. This is honestly something out of the movies. They decide together that all these established career criminals were going to form the ultimate bank robbing all-star team. You remember the dream team from the 90s, the first pro basketball team where they just picked all the best players in the world and threw them on the Olympics? That's what these guys decided they were going to do. And they come up with a plan. Part of that plan involves young John Dillinger getting out on parole, which he does. Now, this part is amazing. When I say they had a plan, I mean they had a plan. Remember, all the hardened criminals are still in prison. Dillinger proceeds to go on a crime spree, robbing everything he can, including robbing police officers to improve his weapons arsenal so he can get enough money and resources to bribe and buy his fellow criminals out of prison so they can escape. He's buying a prison escape. It's really cool, isn't it, Chris? I know it's really cool. Quit, everybody. Stop celebrating criminality. But that's really freaking awesome. This may be my favorite part of the entire story. Dillinger then gets busted. He gets arrested. Remember, the dude was out on parole committing all these crimes, so his parole officer did not have to twist the rules to find a parole violation or 10 with John Dillinger. Gets arrested in a local jail. Sheriff running a local jail. The sheriff finds a prison escape plan on John Dillinger when he arrests him, but it's so vague they have no idea what it is. Turns out Dillinger had already planned and put into place everything necessary for his bank robbing buddies at the state penitentiary to break out of prison. I'm not making this up. And the plan was unbelievable. They had four different layers of security they had to get to. They kept grabbing new hostages, threatening the next group of people with the next group of security. Finally, they lock everyone in the vault and steal a car, and they escape this state prison. Only the problem is John is now in jail. Not for long, though.
Is he smarter than everyone?
Who knows?
Does he think so? Yeah. The Jesse Kelly Show.
How exposed is your information online? How much of your information is out there? Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think you're naive. I don't think you have a public profile with your home address, your online dating profile information, your gun records, all your previous addresses, things like that. I don't think you'd knowingly put all that information out there for everyone, but something like that may be happening with your information online. What I mean is there may be public records posted about you. You wouldn't paint your private information on your garage door, but you could be leaving a footprint everywhere you go online. A lot of things you do, maybe records you didn't even set up yourself, those records might just be hanging out there. They could be out there and others could be able to see them. It's more important than ever to find out what could be posted online about you. Go look up your name or anyone else's right now. Go to getthetruthnow.com. That's getthetruthnow.com. John puts together the plan to bust a bunch of hardened career criminals out of prison. Then he gets arrested himself, but the plan is in place. They bust out of prison. Well, we can't go on our robbing spree without John. They now decide they're going to go bust Dillinger out of jail. And they do. They show up. Stick up, hold up, whatever you want to call it. Hold up the sheriff whose jail he's in. End up shooting and killing the guy and bust Dillinger out of jail. Remember, as we romanticize this stuff And as we laugh about it all, I'm not trying to make it heavier than it has to be. It's not, but these were real people. It sounds like a movie. All this stuff sounds like a movie. That was a real sheriff, family, and everything else. Gunned down. As you can imagine, law enforcement not too happy about it, and they're about to get angrier. Because this hardened group of criminals, they go on a bank robbing spree like we've never seen before. And the reason they're so good is they're incredibly disciplined. Unlike Dillinger's later gang, which we'll get to in a minute. But these were the guys who did this for a living. They are scouting banks out. They're the guys like you see in the movies, the criminals who are timing the drive from the bank to the cop shop. They know how long they have. They have escape routes out of town planned. They have vehicles, really, really, really fast ones, and they soup them up. Remember that mechanics training? To make them even faster. In fact, believe it or not, they have vehicles faster than the cops' vehicles at this time. You want to talk about brazen? They needed weapons. They decided they wanted a lot of weapons. Tommy guns, those are 45 caliber submachine guns, big, heavy Browning, fully automatics, handguns, everything. Where do they get those weapons? They raid police armories at gunpoint. I'm not exaggerating. They stick up police departments and steal their weapons. They then start knocking off banks for gigantic paydays. Remember, we're talking 1920s, 1930s currency here. They're knocking off banks for 30 grand, 40 grand, 50 grand. Do you have any idea how much money that is? And remember, these are people who consciously made the decision to do the things they're doing. These are not accidental gangsters. They decide they want to look good doing it. They decide to start buying the fanciest suits. Those hats you know from all the old school gangster movies, the cool looking hat cocked off to the side. That's not just from the movies. They did it. Remember, they're knocking off banks? How hard do you think you'd have to look? If you're a gangster and you want to look good doing it and you want to be famous for being a gangster or a bank robber, whatever you want to call it, a thug, however you want to view them, how hard do you think you'd have to look to find a sympathetic journalist out there who wanted to sell a couple extra papers? They're doing interviews, secret interviews with journalists. They're becoming stars. And no, they weren't a bunch of psychopathic killers murdering everybody they found, but these were killers. But just like Dillinger always wanted, this group especially, polite and professional when they robbed banks. Nice to women and children. Wait over here, please. Did not walk in shooting. Most of the time, did not fire a shot. They were famous. And now we're in the J. Edgar Hoover era where this guy's going crazy. One, because it looks terrible for the new found Federal Bureau of Investigation that there's some group of bank robbers and killers terrorizing the nation, and there were a bunch of them. Two, Hoover hates the positive publicity. As you can imagine, how angry do you get at media today? You've heard me blow a gasket behind this microphone before at media today. Hoover can't stand this. Hoover has these high standards for the FBI. As soon as he got hired, he fired all the women. Could you imagine doing that today? Fired all the women, put in personal grooming standards, put in standards for physical fitness. Like, he wanted the FBI to be these elite dudes. He wanted the FBI to be the one everybody worshipped and celebrated, and instead everyone loves John Dillinger. And Dillinger's gang is going crazy. Finally, there's a problem. Cops start dying. Cops are trying to chase these people down, doing the best they can. Remember, they were robbing armories. Most of these guys grew up hunting and fishing or doing crimes. They're doing okay with weapons, too. The heat is simply too much, and they decide, okay, we have got to lay low for a little while, or we are all going to go to jail. Let's try to get into Mexico. They try to escape into Mexico, and all the border crossings are being watched because they're worried about that. So they keep pushing west, trying to get across, end up in Tucson. And oh, man, did they hit some bad luck in Tucson. I don't think I need to elaborate for any of you exactly what's happening right now with the world's economy. You know, we still have over 50 million people unemployed in this country. The Fed, they're printing money like it's going out of style, devaluing the currency. We are in the very definition of a bubble, a big one. And I don't think I should elaborate for you how ugly it's going to get when that bubble bursts. And you notice I said when that bubble bursts. Get a gold IRA. Get a hold of Gold Alliance. It's the highest rated 5-star A+ Better Business Bureau gold company out there. You need Gold Alliance. And if you go to goldalliance.com/Jesse now, you can get up to $5,000 in free gold and silver coins for a purchase. That's goldalliance.com/Jesse. Dillinger and Dillinger's gang, they have boatloads of cash because they've been robbing banks everywhere. They have weapons galore, but they are on the run. And remember, this is not an era of digital cash. And if you're John Dillinger and the crew, you can't exactly open up a savings account with USAA. So you're carrying it with you or burying it somewhere. You have to carry it with you. They need to lay low somewhere. Now, personally, this is where I think criminal mastermind John Dillinger and his bank-robbing friends went a little sideways, but they decide to post up at the Hotel Congress in Tucson, a significant hotel at the time. For future reference, you aspiring bank robbers, maybe don't put up at the ritziest hotel in town when you're trying to lay low. That's what the dirty hotels are for. But they're there. They're at the Hotel Congress. They haven't been busted yet. And in the all-time run of bad luck, something happens. Hang on.
Jesse Kelly Show. This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
Dillinger and the gang staying at the Hotel Congress in Tucson, Arizona, find themselves waking up in the middle of the night and... Does anyone else smell smoke? The freaking hotel catches on fire. And I do not mean a tiny little fire by the ashtray in the lobby. I mean a blaze. The kind of blaze that involves Dillinger and his people being taken down out of the hotel windows by firemen and ladders. What do you think is still in the room as the Hotel Congress is burning? suitcases full of money and weapons. And who knows, I tried to find the details, I couldn't find them. Who knows if any of them were open, for all I know, when it's time to go. I'm assuming the gang had the presence of mind, but for all I know, they were just laying there, weapons, cash. I mean, if you're going to live that life, you might as well sleep on all the cash, Chris. Now, one of the gang members realizes they're in a bit of trouble and pays off a few of the firemen to go get their suitcases full of money. Doesn't necessarily work well. The firemen consider this to be a bit suspicious. And these guys really love their luggage. They report them. They're arrested again. I know you're going to find this shocking, but John Dillinger escapes from prison. On my life, I have no idea how they continue to do this all the time. John Dillinger escapes from prison. This time, he fashions a wooden gun and paints it with black shoe polish to look like a real gun and uses it to stick up one of the prison guards and steal his real gun and escape from prison and steals the sheriff's car when he escapes from prison. On my life. I've never seen anything like this. Now, remember when I told you the FBI was all over him now? Really, really angry. Cops are dead. Obviously, local police departments, local sheriff's departments are all over him, too. He has heat everywhere. And apparently it took law enforcement some time in this country to get their footing underneath him. Because you know where John Dillinger goes after he escapes from prison yet again and steals a sheriff's car? His dad's house. He goes to visit his dad. There's actually a picture of it where Dillinger's there with the wooden gun in his hand. Just goes to visit dad. Nobody's watching dad's house. Nobody thought, hey, maybe he'll go visit family. That part of the story, I think I read two different places just to make sure, on top of the first one, just to make sure that was right. And it's true. He went and visited his dad. Gets a picture with his dad. But he does have a problem. Remember, John Dillinger has chosen a life of crime. This is a man on the run. This is a man in trouble. And now this is a man in need of some cash. Only that long-established group of career criminals, they're all either in prison or on their way to the electric chair at this point in time. They've all been broken up and busted, and Dillinger falls in with a man who I'm not going to dwell on because he is fascinating enough. I'm actually going to do a whole show on him maybe later this week. Stay tuned for that. Maybe next week. His name is Babyface. Babyface Nelson. I believe his first name's or real name is Lester Gillis, if I remember. I don't have to look into that. I didn't read into it. He is going to be a fascinating one. You know, all the nice things we were saying about Dillinger, we won't be saying any of those about Babyface, and Dillinger's about to find out why. There are people, I know this from watching 8 trillion mob documentaries and crime documentaries and crime books and crime articles and things about bank robbers and gangsters and all these things. There are various degrees in any world, in any business. What business are you in? Are there people who take things to the extreme in your business? Probably. On both sides. There are probably people who do it extremely lackadaisically, and there are probably people who are extremely obsessed with it. There are degrees of sanity and violence in the criminal world, too. And every once in a while, you come across one of these guys. You see them a lot in the mob and organized crime stuff, but every once in a while, you come across these guys where even the other criminals are pretty scared of them and don't necessarily want to work with them. And that's Babyface Nelson. This guy was a complete psychopath. In fact, he would murder you if you even called him Babyface. Not a big fan of that name. But when I say would murder you, that's not like a big deal to Babyface. When I say not a big deal, it's one of those things he would do just randomly. It was almost undoubtedly, if he wasn't a bank robber, would have been a serial killer or something. He's just one of those guys, a complete psychopath. And Dillinger joins up with Babyface, and this gang is night and day different than the first one. They're doing things faster. They're doing things much less professionally. And because Babyface is along, people are getting shot, lots of them, lots of the time. Babyface will do things like stand guard outside of the prison and then randomly get angry at somebody and start spraying civilians with a Tommy gun on the sidewalk. There's no playing it cool. There's no talking your way out of things. He's shooting cops. He's shooting civilians. On the times he'd walk into the bank, he'd start shooting at the roof. He could mow down civilians at any time. At one point in time, another member of the gang had to tackle him to keep him from just massacring people. The man is a complete psychopath, and now we're nearing towards the end, aren't we? Isn't this always the story? Eventually, the gang decides they need to really lay low now because Dillinger just went to a tavern with his girlfriend. She went in first. She gets busted because the cops were in there waiting for him. Dillinger got sold out by a buddy. Now he has this psycho baby face with him. His girlfriend's been arrested. They don't know what to do. So he goes and visits his dad again. I'm not joking. And the cops still aren't there. And then they know they need to lay low. They pick a retreat destination. I was going to say Minnesota, but it was Wisconsin. I almost said Minnesota. They pick a little hotel. It's just a little hotel where they hang out and play cards. The owner of the hotel catches them all wearing weapons, freaks out, calls the FBI or calls law enforcement. The FBI, now we have a gang of police killers on our hands. They swarm down there. And when I say police killers, I mean that's a big deal in law enforcement world. You need to keep that in mind. When one of their own goes down, they will come for you in force, as they should. But the FBI is in its early stages. You remember how they weren't even watching Dad's house? They didn't know anything about raids either. Now they have newfound police powers. The FBI didn't really have much for physical police powers, but FDR had signed a bill into law by this point in time. And the FBI knows how dangerous this can be. And let me clarify for a brief moment. We'll probably do a show on Bonnie and Clyde once too, but just do a quick image search of Bonnie and Clyde car. That's how seriously law enforcement was taking these people now. They're not taking chances with cop killers. They're gunning them down. Should have been a little more careful. Hang on.
The Jesse Kelly Show.
I despise contracts. I despise complexity. I know I'm in the same situation you're in. Life is busy. I have the same stuff you do. Family, wife, kids. Life is busy. Got a million different things going on. I don't have time to wrestle with my home security company. I don't have time to read through fine print. I don't have time for a 4 to 8 hour window when the technician's going to show up and install everything. I don't have time for that. But I still need home security. You do too. I don't have to have time for it anymore because Simply Safe has made life easy for me. Starting at just $15 a month, you can get home security, sensors, cameras with no contract. No contract. Go to simplysafe.com/Jesse. That's simplysafe.com/Jesse. That gets you free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. The FBI shows up at this Wisconsin hotel. It's nighttime. They kind of surround it, I guess. Kind of don't. I mean, clearly didn't do the best job in the world. Remember, this is a public hotel. There are other people here. Three dudes hop in a vehicle, completely innocent civilian dudes, I should mention. Three completely innocent dudes hop in a vehicle, crank up the tunes. They had radios in the cars back then. Let's jam out. Who's at home from dinner? They're leaving the hotel where the cops and the FBI are trying to flag them down and tell them to stop. But the radio's too high. The dudes don't hear. The cops open fire on the vehicle, killing one of the three guys and wounding the other two. Not the golden days of the FBI, to put it mildly. Obviously, Dillinger and the crew hears this shootout. They manage to escape all of this. Now, the circle is closing around Dillinger, and it's closing around Dillinger very quickly. Dillinger decides he's going to get plastic surgery to alter his appearance. Where would a criminal like this get plastic surgery? Come on, people. Doctors have bill payments, too. I believe he found a mob doctor who had lost his license who agreed to come get all this stuff done for him. Either way, he finds somebody, does the plastic surgery, almost dies during the plastic surgery because, again, when you're getting illegal surgeries done, sometimes all the safety precautions aren't in place. They're screwing up his anesthesia. He's waking up while they're operating on his face. Would probably be a bit of an adjustment period, waking up to find somebody giving you a new chin. Dillinger wakes up. They get done. The doctor then charges him and one of his other gang buddies for changing their fingerprints. They would burn off their fingerprints with acid, which is really creepy. That had to hurt really bad, but that's still really cool. This is a man who seems like he wants to disappear. When I say seems like it, you go to all this trouble with plastic surgery, but you're still going out all the time. You've heard of the FBI's public enemies list? And there's always like a top 10 public enemy, top 10. And who's public enemy number one? They created the public enemies list during this time. And guess who? Here's a little trivia question for you. Guess who the first ever public enemy number one on the FBI's list was? John Dillinger. Dillinger, however, plastic surgery, new fingerprints, decides he wants to go to the theater. And full disclosure, I don't know what kind of theater this is, if this is a silent film, if this is a play they went to. But he shows up in town with his girlfriend and a madam, if you will. A madam, a lady running a house of ill repute. Chris? I know you're going to find this shocking, but the madam was on the wrong side of the law, too, and about to be deported back to Europe. Because we used to deport people who came here, who immigrated here and committed crimes back in an America that was sane. She does not want to be deported. She goes to the cops, says, I'll help you find public enemy number one. I'll help you catch him. They say, okay, we'll cut you a deal. She tells them where he's going to be. He's going to the movies with his girlfriend and I on this particular night. Goes to the theater. They are given orders by J. Edgar Hoover himself to not go into the theater after him because these Dillinger and his guys were always shooting it out with the cops at all times. Didn't want to risk more innocent people killed because, again, the FBI's coming off some real bad press when you murk some innocent dude at a Wisconsin hotel. They wait for him to come outside. An FBI agent is stationed at the door, and he's told to give the signal of lighting a cigar when Dillinger comes out. He lights the cigar when he sees Dillinger. Dillinger, hyper aware, again, a highly intelligent individual, picks up on the dude lighting a cigar, grabs his weapon, and takes off running. Cops run him down in an alleyway and shoot him, I believe, 5 times, but only one of them was fatal. Shot him in the spinal cord. Dead. Came out his eyeball or underneath his eye, somewhere in his face. What do you mean, how, Chris? I said shot him in the spinal cord, Chris. The spinal cord is long, and Chris wanted to know how it came out his eye. He's such a child. Bullets bounce around, especially when they get inside a body, especially if you're not using a very high caliber, and they can come out anywhere. You shoot somebody with like a little 22, you can shoot someone in the hip and it'll come out his shoulder. It'll just bounce all over bones and ribs and everything else. It's not good. Probably not feeling good as it makes its way through there either. Possibly some internal damage. Might want to get that looked at. And thus ends the criminal career of John Dillinger. I don't do a ton of foreign policy on the show. We do some. I care about it some, but it's always, you know, one of those top 10 on my list of things I care about type thing. And to be frank, I've seen all these public policy polling things. It's always about that for you, too. You care about foreign policy is kind of. It's a nice distraction. We like to cheer when some terrorist gets nuked. Even last week, we had a huge Israel-UAE peace deal. It wasn't that big of a story with the public. Lasted a few hours. Everyone's all, oh, he did that? Nice. Where's the UAE? It's just something people can, and I'm not blaming you. I'm not judging you. I'm the exact same way. It's not an ugly American thing. You care about things in general the closer they are to home. You are probably never going to step foot in the UAE. Maybe not Israel either. Although I want to go there one day. Walk in the footsteps of Jesus before Chris's people killed him. I want to check it out. I'd probably never go into the UAE. I mean, I don't know. Is it nice there, Chris? I can't imagine it's nice. Either way, I don't do a ton of foreign policy. But I saw this, and the only reason it perked my ears up is because the guy who sent me the headline said to me, man, can you believe this? And the headline is this. This is from MSN.com. Headline says, Iran paid bounties for targeting U.S. troops, intelligence report suggests. Essentially, it's Iran's government offering cash to Taliban dudes for going after U.S. troops in Iran. Or in Afghanistan, I mean. And I thought to myself, well, yeah. Some people choose to be bad. It's a choice. Yes, there are people with bad upbringings and things like that and fall into it. I'm not denying that. There are people who choose to be bad. John Dillinger. He decided early on, I'm going to be a criminal. Iran has made their decision. Iran wants to be the bad guy. They do. Let's just accept that. How exposed is your information online? How much of your information is out there? Don't get me wrong. I don't think you're naive. I don't think you have a public profile with your home address, your online dating information, your gun records, previous addresses. I don't think you'd knowingly put that information out there, but it might be out there online. What I mean is there may be public records posted about you. You wouldn't paint your private info on your garage door, but you could be leaving a footprint everywhere you go online. A lot of things you do online, or maybe records you didn't even set up, those records might just be hanging out there, and others might be able to see them. It's more important than ever to find out what could be posted online about you. Go ahead and look up your name or anyone else's right now. Go to GetTheTruthNow.com. That's GetTheTruthNow.com. Enter your own name. You'll see instant results.
On the Jordan Harbinger Show, you'll hear amazing stories from people that have lived them, from spies to CEOs, even an undercover agent who infiltrated the Gambino crime family. You're about to hear a preview of the Jordan Harbinger Show with Jack Garcia, who did just that.
My career was 24 out of 26 years was solely dedicated working undercover. Now I walk in, I'm in the bar. Now there's a barmaid there, good-looking young lady. She's serving me a drink. Yeah, what would you like? I usually, my drink was, give me a Kettle One martini, three olives, glass of water on the side. I finish the drink. The guys come in. I'm going to go in my pocket, take out the big wad of money. Bam, I give her $100. If you're with the mob, I say, hey, Jordan, you're on record with us. That means we protect you. Nobody could shake you down. We could shake you down, but you're on record with us.
For more on how Jack became so trusted in the highest levels of the Gambino organization, check out episode 392 of The Jordan Harbinger Show.
This is an iHeart podcast.